You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Brookings. I'm Martin Indyk, the director of the foreign policy program at Brookings. And on behalf of that program, and especially the Saban Center, Director Ken Pollock is here in the front row this morning. We're delighted to bring you another Statesman's Forum, this time to host the Minister of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation of the Kingdom of Morocco, Tayeb Fassi Firi. It's a special pleasure for me. The Minister has been a good friend personally and a good friend of the United States for many years, and I've long wanted to have the opportunity to host him here, and I'm delighted that he's agreed to do so. The Minister has a distinguished career in diplomacy, but it didn't start out that way. He was a professor of microeconomics at the University of Paris, then became a research fellow at the French Institute of International Relations, IFRI, before he joined the planning directorate in the Ministry of Planning of the Kingdom of Morocco. From 1986 to 1989, he served as the head of division in charge of relations with the European community at the foreign ministry, and then was nominated as Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs and Cooperation in 1993 by the late King Hassan II. He served in successive governments, and then His Majesty King Mohammed VI appointed him to the position of Minister of Foreign Affairs and Cooperation. As some of you may know, King Hassan made a king's speech a couple of weeks ago. It did not get a lot of attention here. But King Mohammed announced sweeping reforms, political reforms. As Ken Pollock was pointing out last night, we have in North Africa today an amazing set of phenomena. On the one side, a leader, Muammar Gaddafi, who is using brutal force to suppress the political aspirations of the Libyan people. On the other side, we have Tunisia, where a revolution has taken place, and longtime leader, President Ben Ali, has been overthrown in 3 days and left the country, and a process of transition to democracy is now underway. And then we have what Ken was calling the third way, the way that King Mohammed II has announced for Morocco. And it's that way that I've asked the Foreign Minister to explain to us this morning. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Tayeb Fassi Firi to the Statesman's Forum.
Ladies and gentlemen, Madam the Ambassador, thank you. Thank you very much, Martin, for this introduction. But maybe you have to add that my English is still today, after this long career, still approximative. But I will try. I will try to say some, to express some observations about what happened in our area. And we can first have some preliminary conclusion. And I think that the first conclusion is that there is no Arab exceptions for the universal principles for democracy. And hopefully the Arab citizens, like others, wants a better life and wants to live in the context of freedom and pluralism, democratic multi-parties. Then no one can progress, including in our area, without walking on the two legs, economic development and political progress. The second lesson is that even there is a growth, economic growth, this economic growth have to be shared by all people in a country, shared in different area of the country, but also shared by all people. And I think that the Egyptians and Tunisians' cases offer to us this lesson. Third observation is that what happened in some countries in terms of revolution, when we look to the Tunisian and the Egyptian case, we see that the regime maybe was, I don't know if we said that in English, sclerosé.
Sclerotic.
Sclerotic. It's more erotic than in French. remember that when the President Ben Ali was re-elected in November 2009, some weeks after, there was a mobilization from many people to encourage a new candidate in 2014. And imagine these people, young people, opened their eyes under the Ben Ali regime, and we said to them that we have to live under the same system, with the same values, with the same injustice, until 2019. And I think that it's also the case for the Egypt of Hosni Mubarak. Then we can say that there are many of hopes in these countries, and that the Arab group is not a monolithic group, and the regime in Bahrain is totally different than in Mauritania and Algeria and Jordan, or Emirates and Tunisia or Morocco and Yemen. Monarchies here, liberal monarchies here, more or less liberal monarchies there, unique party, military power, and this specific power in Libya. It means that the change will happen, hopefully, because we are faced in our area the same challenges. Same challenges in terms of employment, same challenges in terms of investing people, because more than 50% of our societies are less than 25 years old. And how to respond to the ambitions, natural ambitions and legitimate ambitions of our youth? Facing the same challenges, probably going forward in terms of evolution, but there will be no domino impact in this region, because each country have its own specific itinerary, because each country have its own political system. But between revolution and evolution, the spectrum is large, and I hope that each country can progress and respond to this legitimate aspiration of people, and namely of youth people in this area. What about Morocco? I can say that first, Morocco refused the unique party since the beginning. And it was not easy, that in a monarchy express clearly that we want a multipartyism. And people work, and political parties work together, and hopefully we have this system, and the multipartyism was consecrated in the first constitution in 1962. And when I read some days ago the proposal, the new constitution in Egypt, I think that we have to be proud as Moroccan that in 1962 we have this constitution. And this constitution was amended 4 times. And then it's expressed that Morocco evolute, progress, and progress looking to the evolution of our society, but also of our environment regionally and internationally. We have also integrate the principle of alternance. In 1998, for the first time, the opposition, socialist opposition, came to the power. We also tried since this time with the King Mohammed VI to continue, thanks to some effort, to progress on our two legs, on the economic field, human development, fighting against poverty, and the other leg is the fighting against corruption, reforming justice, creating best business environment possible. And in this context, we negotiate and conclude an FTA with USA. But beyond the trade or business or investments aspect, what we reach at this time is to take a strong commitment for a better environment for business. And when we talk about environment for business, we talk about the necessity to have transparency, the necessity to have a clear IPR rules, a necessity to have a transparent rules of game in Morocco. And we did the same with European Union. Probably you know that Morocco, since many years, asked for a specific status with European Union. And the European Union, I don't say offer to us, because they are interesting for that, proposed to Morocco an advanced status. And this advanced status for us is a testimony that Morocco walk on these two legs, and he will continue to walk on these two legs. And we are very happy and satisfied to note that the same status just given to Jordan recently. What happened in the Arab world then, taking account the evolution in Morocco, I want to insist on, as Martin said, this audacious new step taken by Morocco and people of Morocco. And when the king proposed an advanced regionalization in November 2009, then before the Arab Spring, saying that it's time for Morocco to have this, not only decentralization, but more of that, because the democracy starts first at the local level. When we present that, and all political parties, all NGOs participate to the debate about the regionalization, and the report presented to the king during the last 2 months, then the king said, okay, for this important step. But maybe we have to take this opportunity to go forward deeply and to not go to constitutional reform only for regionalization. Let us take this momentum. Let us take this possibility and opportunity. Listen to what happened in our own society, but also looking to what happened around us, not only in the Arab world, but also in Europe and in other countries. And what it was now in the engine, it's an inclusive debate for the best constitution we can have during this year. The king asked to have a proposal of reform before the end of June. Before the end of June. And the process, as I said, starts. Inclusive one with all political parties, with all NGOs, with all trade unions, including youth organizations. And the goal is to have total independence of powers and powers body, executive, parliamentary, and justice. In Morocco, the justice is still today an administration. It will be, before the end of the year, an independent, totally independent body. I am a member of a cabinet, elected cabinet, with the large coalition of political parties. But we will have a jump here during the next month. Elected government, yes, but with the prime minister issued from who will have the best score in the elections. Human rights. We just reform our mechanism of human rights. And I can say to you, not as diplomat, not as member of the cabinet, that this system is maybe the best system for the supervision and the guarantees of human rights in our area, with the best international standards, with the new National Council for Human Rights, with the new and revigorated institution of a mediator, and a new and energetic executive coordination among the government in connection with the international institutions and also international NGOs. Then, at the same moment, some protests continue, peaceful protests. And here too, we are happy that it's happened like this. I'll talk about inclusive debate. We have also to note that the process in the street continue, because there is the freedom for protest when it's peaceful. And I am sure that in some month, Morocco will continue. I don't appreciate the term exception or the term leaders of reform in the region, but because we do that for us first, not only to come to Washington and to say my country is the best in the region. No, because we want to see our people progress and our people taking all possibilities and opportunities for their own benefits. In conclusion, the Arab Spring is here. We are not sure that the summer, Arab summer, will succeed to the current Arab Springs. And maybe, and we can talk, maybe we will go directly here or there to a dark winter, like it happened in our area in Iran in 1979, like when we see that the counter-revolutions are still dynamic in Tunisia or in Egypt, and when we see that Al-Qaeda will probably take this opportunity to pollute the atmosphere, because Al-Qaeda needs large space, more than only the Sahel-Sahara region, but they are very active now in all West Africa. And maybe they will take this, even they are surprised, like us, by the evolution in this country. Then we have to be very careful, very prudent, and we have all, USA, European Union, Arab countries, have to work together to protect this positive evolution, to accompany these transitions, and to be sure that the legitimate aspiration of people will not kept by others and to come back to autocratic systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We're going to have a bit of a conversation here first, and then the Minister will take your questions. I wonder if I can start with the political reform process and just get you to elaborate on a couple of things. Your presentation was very clear, but I suspect not everybody has had the chance to read the King's Speech. And so there are a couple of things that I wanted to just have you elaborate on. The first is the Parliament. As you said, you've had political parties. You've had rotation. Opposition leader and party has become the government in the past. The difference now, as I understand it, is that the King will not appoint the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister will be the leader of the largest party in the Parliament. Is that correct?
Exact. And it's important. It's new. It's happened. The current Prime Minister is the leader of the party who has the best results. But naturally, it needs a coalition. But His Majesty, like in other countries, democratic country, will ask and invite the best results party to lead the government. And it will be in the Constitution.
I don't know whether you can answer this question, but because there's a constitutional process that you've described, but what do you imagine will be the reserve powers of the King under this arrangement? What powers will he retain?
First, the monarchy in Morocco is one of the oldest monarchy in the world. Second, the monarchy play a key role in terms of cement and guarantee of the unity, because Morocco are naturally an Arab country, but we are not only Arab. We are Arabs, we are Muslim, we are Jews, we are Andalus, we are sub-Saharan African country, and it's this mixed needs of this different source of our identity are expressed by this monarchical system. The King is also commander of the faithful, and in Morocco, the political area and the religious area are totally independent, but they join only in one point at the level of the monarch. Then it's important, more than symbolic role. And everyone in Morocco prefer to live in this under this umbrella. But now, in terms of executive decisions, the role of the government will be enlarged significantly, and His Majesty is open now to delegate many of its current power to the government, and this government will take its responsibility vis-à-vis the Parliament. When I said that here for you, it's totally normal. But let us come back to what happened in our area take note that it's a very important and significant step.
foreign policy and defense will remain in the hands of the king?
Like in all democratic countries, defense, because it's the guarantee of the unity, foreign affairs, it's a shared power, but the head of state will continue to lead the foreign policy with an instrument, the government.
So as foreign minister, you will be a member of the executive branch of the government?
I have only a visibility for some months.
Not you personally.
After the referendum, many things will change, naturally, with the implementation of the next constitution.
I didn't mean to make it personal. The foreign minister is a member of the executive branch of the government?
I note that in many countries, the foreign minister is not necessary MP. It's open, totally open. So, I hope for Morocco that it will be the best possible foreign minister.
The king also announced, and you mentioned it, this new regionalization arrangement. What will be the powers of the regional governments?
It's an important point because it will be a real revolution. The revolution we appreciate in Morocco. Because today, at the level of the region, we have people and appointed by the government, by the national government. But today, we will have an elected council at the region with the president, with all the budget for the local development. And then the elected people will have the power to manage the region. It's not easy. This transition is not easy because the elected people means that the political party can have a program and have the capacity to manage that. But we will take the experience of some countries like Mexico or Indonesia to have success in this important step. Important because we have many regions in Morocco. In each region, we have some disparities, socially, economically, and we will create a specific fund of solidarity between the regions, but also inside each region, the best possibility to, in housing, in education, in health, in roads, will be between the end of the local government.
The independence of the judiciary is also a new development here. And that, presumably, that will be guaranteed under the Constitution?
Yes.
And so the judiciary will function independently of the king as well as the parliament?
No. The justice will evaluate independently of the parliament and the executive. But the justice will have its own law and totally independent with any power. The king, the justice will be expressed on behalf of the king. But symbolically.
He will appoint the judges?
Or no, we will have an independent body. Because don't forget that, naturally, Martin, you think in terms of Anglo-Saxon formula or American formula.
Sorry.
But in Morocco, it's... No, not sorry. But in Morocco, first we have our own justice principles. But we have the legacy of the Latin law and the Napoleon Code. And we will have what is important. First is this total independence. It's not the reality today. And because some call phone time to time from the Justice Department to some judge. But now we want to assure this total independence.
Can I ask you, just before we go to the audience, a couple of questions about foreign policy? Your region, the Maghreb, North Africa, is now in considerable turmoil. Do you feel it in Morocco? Is the troubles in Libya going to affect life internally in Morocco in any way?
Internally, not, but in terms of ambition, yes, because we have a treaty of the Maghreb Union. This treaty is frozen because of the difficulties we have with our brothers in Algeria. But we have this ambition to build this important integration among the five member states, Mauritania, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and Libya. And what happened in Libya demonstrates that maybe we have to wait more. But what is sure is that when we talk about North Africa evolutions, from Egypt to Tunisia, the Libyan case is maybe very complicated. And I think that no one can today said clearly what will happen. There is, maybe for the first time, a strong expression of real consensus on the Arab League. Because unfortunately we have to note that the Arab League didn't succeed in terms of economic integration or in terms of sharing the same values or in terms of crisis management. And I hope that taking the opportunity of this Arab Spring, we can progress and we can give to our common house. But the Arab League is a bizarre common house with many windows, many some national position are stronger than a common decisions. But we note that the Arab League claimed the first for the nose fly zone in Libya, with some reservation here or there, Syria and Algeria and Mauritania. And I note that my colleague from Mauritania changed this morning, maybe due to that, I don't know. But
he changed against or in support?
No, did change. A new foreign ministry this morning. But this appeal coming from the region was listening by the international community. And today we have a resolution of Security Council which binding us, or to us, all international community and all countries. We are in the Chapter 7. And this resolution, it's not the resolution of USA or France or UK. It's our common resolution. Now, each country can say, I'm interested by this, or I reading this wording, or interpret this reading like that. But the resolution is common. And this resolution talk about four things. First, ceasefire. Second, to protect civilians taking all necessary measures. Third, humanitarian actions. And four, political process. Some countries decide that to protect the civilians, they have to intervene against the army which killed the civilians. And then I cannot say that it's illegal. I note that there is a large coalition of countries saying that it's the best way. I have to respect this point of view. But Morocco said, at the same time, the resolution is wider. And some countries have to prepare themselves for a contribution for humanitarian actions or the D-Day for the real, deep, frank, inclusive
dialogue between people in Libya, between people. Then,
does inclusive include Colonel Gaddafi?
All expression of something. It's sure that there are many groups saying many things, asking for change. These people we watch on TV with the green, they express also something. But we have some experience in the past.
So Morocco is part of the coalition, but it's not
Morocco
participating in the no-fly
Morocco
zone.
Morocco participated to the Paris summit because we were invited. And as I mentioned, because the resolution binding to us together, I participate to this summit. And with my colleague of Jordan, with my colleague of Emirates, with my colleague of Qatar, and with my colleague of Iraq, and with Amr Moussa. And Iraq, because it's the current president of the Arab League Council. And we discussed, and I said what I just said now. Then we cannot say that Morocco is a member of military coalition, but Morocco is a member of a coalition trying to the best implementation of the Security Council resolution.
You know, we have a saying here. I don't know how well it translates into French or Arabic, but we say that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Are you familiar with this? And so the question is as follows. Does what happens in Libya stay in Libya, or does it have a ripple effect through the region? We can see what happens in Egypt clearly or has a powerful impact on the rest of the region. But is Libya different to that?
No, Libya, geographically, the localization is also important. The heart of the North Africa, the heart of Mediterranean, South Mediterranean, but also in connection with many countries from the Sahel and
African country,
and it showed that it can have a real impact. And when I said some minutes ago that Al-Qaeda can exploit the situation, because Al-Qaeda is present in the Maghreb, in the south of Algeria, in Mauritania, in Mali, in Niger, in Chad. And we want to avoid a link between Al-Qaeda for the Maghreb Islamic and the activities of in the east of Africa, Somalia and others. And when the Gaddafi said it will have an impact, sub-regional impact, we have to take account of this.
So he's exaggerating. Is he exaggerating what's Al-Qaeda's role at the moment? But you're saying that there's the chaos can provide
inside Libya, probably, because I cannot. I don't know if we can say that all people in Libya, in Benghazi, are from Al-Qaeda. Probably not. But what it's sure is that Al-Qaeda will move, will try, will test, will intervene, taking the opportunity of these question marks. Al-Qaeda loves the space where there is no strong and democratic national power.
Why don't we go to the audience now for questions? Before I do it, I didn't recognize at the beginning that we have some distinguished guests in the audience, the Ambassador of Jordan, and the Ambassador of Norway, and of course your excellent Ambassador, Ambassador Marquardt. So welcome to all of you. Let's take some questions. Please wait for the microphone. Identify yourself to the Foreign Minister, and please make sure there's a question mark at the end of your yes, here.
Good morning, Mr. Fassifieri. My name is Sharaf Mansouri, and I'm a senior at Georgetown. My question for you is basically, what role for us, what role for the youth of Morocco in the future? And I'd like to believe in this, and I'd like to believe that it's possible for us to be a model for the region, but what role for us? Thank you.
The answer is simple. Test. Express what you want to express, and do what you want to do, and contribute to the debate. It's open. I cannot say to you, say that the
he's got to finish his studies
first. And Morocco needs all its potentialities. So all potentialities.
How would he participate in the debate?
Is there mechanisms for
the debate?
Yes, there is a mechanism. I talk about this inclusive mechanism. You can send your contribution to via internet articles. We have more in Morocco, more internet. Than voters. No, this is true. It's true. The last elections. That's why this proposal of new constitution offered this fresh, renewed, because the last elections, less than 40% of citizens participate to the elections, and these elections were free, totally free. But some people said, "Why I will go to vote?" But now your voice is important.
There was one right up the back there.
Hello, I'm Evan Prochnow. I'm a graduate student at Georgetown University. And when you spoke about multi-party system, will that include the heretofore banned Islamist parties?
The Islamist parties that have been banned in the past.
Yes. First, it's difficult to say that other parties are not Muslims or. But when you said Islamist, it means that this radical sphere or environment. We have an Islamist, your definition of the Islamist party, in the parliament. And they accept the rules of the game, and they said, okay, for constitutional monarchy since many years. We have some tendance, not representative in the parliament. But if they want to be party, welcome. If this movement continue to say, no, I will not participate, I'm waiting for I don't know which events. But everyone is associated to this, is invited to participate to this debate and dialogue and construction of a new constitution.
Ken?
Thank you, Mr. Foreign Minister. We're honored to have you here with us and to be making this important presentation. I assume that it's not coincidental that you decided to come to the United States to kind of elaborate on the King's vision a bit more. I assume that there's a desire for some kind of an American role in this, but that's what I'd like to ask you about. Obviously, Americans looking at the region, we understand that the changes there need to be made in the region, and the people want ownership of those changes. They don't want them made in the United States. But by the same token, what the King is proposing is exactly what so many Americans want to see more of in the region. And so what I'd like to ask you is, how can the United States help? We'd like to see the King's vision fulfilled. Excuse me, we want to see it succeed. What can the United States of America do to help that?
I think that the question is maybe more larger. And when we compare what's happened, what is happening now in the Arab world, and what's happened in Central and Eastern Europe between 1989 and 1992, it showed that the evolution or revolution or the change from Poland to Hungary, Czechoslovakia, former Czechoslovakia, were embraced by EU, European Union, NATO, OSCE and Reconstruction European Bank and Development. And it was easy for them to do that. It was important, and USA contribute. Now I think that it's time also for European Union and G8 members, and namely USA, to think together, and I hope to act together in a coherent and complementary effort to help this transition, to respect the change. And I said very clearly here, including imposition of conditionality. You want to progress? Okay, I can help you, encourage you. Marshall Plan? Okay. But don't forget that the Marshall Plan, there was some conditionality. And I think that it's logical if USA, Brussels, and others said, okay, we are interested by your process. Europe is interesting also economically by the stability of the region and by the progress of the region. And then if there is this possibility, I am sure that we can win together. It means that we need some new initiative. New speech of President Obama? Maybe. Why not? Taking note of all these lessons. New ministerial meeting, what's so called the Forum for Future, the G8 Bimina effort, and it will be now maybe more successful, because before the Egyptians, the Tunisians, others were very nervous inside. And I think that we can, there are many possibilities to create this convergent effort, to take note of this evolution, to accompany the transitions, and to create a new Arab world. I note that everyone said in Brussels or in Washington or in Paris, London, or Varsovia, we don't want to impose. We just want to accompany. I don't know what is the difference, but what is important is to have an ownership in the definitions of the goal and in the implementations of the means.
Okay, there's a question over.
Thank you, Minister. I first would like to quickly congratulate Morocco's progressive reform on human rights and of the highest in the international standards.
Could you identify yourself?
William Idrisi, George Washington University. What effects do you theorize that the new independent justice system will have on King Mohammed V's plan for reform?
It's important because the justice is the best criteria, I think. The best criteria for a society in progress. And the king said since now 5 years and asked the government to propose a real and deep reforms of the justice system. Some proposal, some project are ready, and they will be adopted during the next weeks or month. But what is more important, it's not only codes, penal codes or new text, it's the spirit. And the spirit is that there is a law, and we ask the judge to implement the law. No more, but no less.
Just occurs to me as you're talking that the word Palestine hasn't come up yet.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting in itself.
Which Palestine you prefer? Gaza or West Bank?
I'm asking the question. but I'm interested to know how you see what's happening in the Arab world How is it likely to impact on the Palestinian issue and the prospects for resolving it?
Many people talk about the capacity of the government of Fayyad to create or to prepare a future independent state. And some people talk about here too, about corruption, about justice, about. But I am sure that it will have an impact, and we see that in West Bank some protests express a very strong desire to have a better life. I note also that the Abu Mazen now try to reach some new success, not in the political negotiation process, because unfortunately it's freeze, but all around the world. And this recognition of an independent Palestinian state for us is important. And but I hope globally that quickly and the better, quicker it will be better to create once again this negotiation process. It has to start once again. And maybe including some new elements. Mm-hmm. Some new elements. Independent state, okay, but which independent state? How to be sure that we will go directly to this democratic Palestinian mm-hmm. state with the constitution, which one? But it's important also for Palestinians to listen to what's happened and to talk also with the brothers in Gaza. We heard about the reconciliations. I know that you know very well that it's not an easy mission, but the dossier and the Israeli-Arab conflict is still here. And if we forget it, unfortunately what happened this morning in Jerusalem, here to talk to us together, to the Arabs and to others.
Yes, down.
Thank you. Mr. Foreign Minister, we'd like to ask you for your views on how the new government will approach the existence of a national government and a monarchy, and at the same time the regions to which you referred, and in terms of how these regions will be structured, because they will contain some of the several communities that comprise the nation. And as some of these communities will be distributed in different regions or maybe concentrated in one or two of several regions, how will a balance be maintained in the new government to represent all of the religious and ethnic populations? Thank you.
First, we have two houses. We have the Senate, and the Senate will change. The Senate will, the participation to the Senate will be the result of the elections at the regional level. In terms of respect, minority, the problem in Morocco, we have not this problem because we are all Moroccans and each of us have its own sensitivity. We are all Moroccans first. And after that, we are from the north, from the east, from the south. It's an important question also because we have a problem. And the name is the Western Sahara. And we present an autonomy proposal to resolve this regional dispute between us and Morocco and Algeria. And it was welcomed by the international community, by the Security Council resolution. And we start negotiate since now 4 years. The Security Council said that the efforts made by Morocco are credible, serious, and we have to negotiate taking account this effort and in a realistic approach. But naturally, we cannot wait for the final solution of the of this problem. That's why we think and we strongly believe that we have to move forward, and the step for the Sahara is in the context of the advanced regionalization. Then it will respect all inhabitants of each area. They will the national rules, the protection of freedom of religions. We have no problem in Morocco because we have Jews, we have Muslims living together since many centuries, and some Jews are more they are longer Moroccan than some Arabs, because Arabs and Islam came to Morocco only 14 centuries ago. But before Morocco, Berbers reality, Jews reality. And this is the interesting mix of people, and each sensitivity will be protected in the context of national law and automatically in the context of regional law.
Barry Schwartz.
AP, please. You said last night that this, told the Associated Press last night, that Arab Spring can quickly end if the transitions in Egypt and Tunisia don't lead to real democracy. How long do you think the people in the street will be comfortable waiting? Their expectations are high. They've forced out governments. They must feel a little bit puffed up. How long do you think they can sustain this enthusiasm without a real change in governance in those two countries? Do you think it'll come quickly? You spoke there could be a dark winter. You don't really expect this to happen in 6 months, do you?
I think, like many others, that the transition is important, and the time for this transition is also important. And like you, we listen and we heard that for the best and fair and fruitful elections in Egypt or in Tunisia, general elections, we need time. Sufficient time for the organization of the new parties to be implemented. But no too much time to not give to some Islamists and radicals the capacity to have more success. And I am sure that the elections have to be organized in Tunisia and Egypt after September for Egypt and after November for Tunisia. I think that these two countries need, if we ask for a common effort of European Union, of G8, and some Arab countries to help this transition, we need some appropriate time. Because youth and others, needs change, political change. But at the same time, the society needs some concrete results in terms of employment, in terms of subsidies, and the transition have to combine between the political reforms and economic and social needs. It's not easy. Tourism, impact, investments, impact. The economy have to continue to produce and to distribute incomes.
This lady here.
Monsieur le ministre, merci. My name is Sama Talha Jibril. I'm the district representative of Circle of Young Moroccan Democrats. And actually, I'm sorry. Here's my question. What are the implications, according to you, of this new reality in the Arab world on the U.S. policy in the Middle East? Thank you.
Let me be very frank. the Bush administration asked for an evolution in the Arab world after 11 September. And there were a large debate here to impose the change, to accompany the change, to help, or to continue to talk with this country, Bin Laden or Ben Ali. Now, with the current administration, they continue this effort, but with different approach. Less imposition, but more ownership. The change happened now in Tunisia, in Egypt. It's more clear. In Libya, we don't know really how will be the outcome. In Yemen, the change go quickly. And then USA have to revitalize their offer vis-à-vis all the region. But I insist, I know that maybe it will be difficult, but in total coherence with others and total complementarity with others, including the European Union.
Over here. No. It's back there. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. We'll come back to you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Elena Farsakh. I'm a photographer. I was very encouraged at the beginning of your presentation when you made reference to the Arab world and you kept making reference to it. There's a tendency here, which actually my father pointed out, my father is Palestinian, to divide the Arab world up to say, for example, North Africa, to not see us as a unified group, to, obviously with differences, but that Arab nationalism is still very much alive, at least for the people in the region. And I was just wondering, given that fact, I think when bad things happen in the Arab world, here we have a tendency to demonize all Arabs. But when things are happening that are frightening to us, maybe in a positive direction, we want to divide it up somewhat. But given Morocco's position as a country that's seen pretty consistently as a positive country, not least of which Hollywood has, I think, done a good job because people love to shoot film there, and that's always a positive thing. What has happened, as much as you can talk about it, with the king speaking to some of these regional leaders behind the scenes? What kind of influence do you guys have in terms of, you know, not putting the screws, that's obviously a very negative thing to say, but to encourage them to be seen as a more positive force rather than bringing about all the negative stuff, which I think is also encouraged because people don't really respect a lot of the other Arab countries the way Morocco is perhaps so respected.
She's referring to across the region, the leaders across the region.
No, Morocco have no lesson to give to anyone. And I insist that each country will reach its own solution, if I can talk about a solution. But what is sure is that I remember myself that in 2002, 2003, the king made many speech and participated to many summit and insist on the necessity to not continue only to talk about politics, Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's important for the stability. But the Arab citizen needs to see this cooperation or the Arab League production have a concrete impact on its life. And unfortunately, we not create a free trade zone among us. some investments are shared, but due to some private initiative rather than a global Arab economic charter, and also human development, because many Arab countries can help. And once again, we cannot compare Qatar with Egypt in terms of needs, in terms of human development level. I think that the most important thing we can share among us as Arabs is maybe to concentrate ourselves more on the concrete operational issues rather than to talk, and reiterate some principles which are time to time in contradiction with our some national decision.
It's interesting to see, however, that Oman, the Sultan of Oman, 1 week after the King's speech, came out with a very similar program of reform for Oman. Yes, over there. And I think this will have to be the last question.
I'm Peter Shutley from Brookings, and thank you very much for speaking here at Brookings. I think many people were quite surprised that the Arab League approved action against Libya. And my question to you is, what's the significance of that? Does that portend greater readiness, willingness among the League and the member states to intervene domestically more than they have in the past? Or just how significant is this step?
In 2009, I think, during the Tunis Arab summit in Tunisia, we adopt a new code for modernity, for progress. And it was at this time not imposed. But the dialogue we have with USA and with the European Union, our partners ask us to fix in resolution or in annex of our charter this modern concept. But nothing happened. Nothing happened concretely. How to modernize and how to progress and how to be more liberal. Now, we have the text, but we have also the events on the ground. And I think that the events on the ground give to us, as member of the Arab League, an opportunity to create a new common house with the common vision, but with, which is more important, the same and shared rules of game. How to conduct some domestic issues in this country have to be the same than in other countries. And I hope that it's in French we said sursaut, and springboard for all common for Arab world. And I hope also that the next Secretary General of the Arab League can work with this spirit. It will be a change.
Mr. Minister, I want to thank you not only for your presentation today, but for Morocco's friendship with the United States and for the leadership role that the King, Mohammed II, and your country is playing now in
thank
this
you.
Arab Spring. We hope that flowers will bloom across the Arab world as a result of the role that you're playing. So, Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.